The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Let's go right to our guest line, bring our guest for the evening in. It's Jerry Wills. Jerry, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio.
Thank you. It's a real privilege to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. Jerry, you do a lot of things, so I'm going to give you the job of telling our audience exactly what you do and how long you've been doing it.
You're right. I do a lot of things. all right. Well, you know, let's start off with the adventure aspect of it. For the past couple of decades, my wife and I have been researching lost cities, ancient places, strange mysteries all over the world, and particularly spending a lot of time in South America. So we've used the technology at hand that we're both well trained in and made documentary videos. And those we brought back, edited, put together, they're up online. We give them away for free. It's expeditions.tv, and folks can join in the adventure there. That's one of the things we do. The other thing is I travel all over the world as a healer. I have a unique ability that allows me to see inside of a person's body. And when I find issues there, I go to work on them and try to help them to recover from whatever is causing their problem. It isn't always a healing aspect. Sometimes it's informational, and because of that, I'm also called a medical intuitive. It's a psychic ability.
Okay.
You know. And the third thing we do, well, we're musicians.
Oh.
And we have songs on the radio all over the world, and we're just moving forward with that.
Very cool. All right, so let's take
Jeff Bird.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's the Jeff Bird Project.
That's the name of the band?
Yeah, like Alan Parsons Project.
Yep.
Alan Parsons is a friend of ours, and Jeff is the person kind of at the top of the pyramid. He does the magic that makes the music sound as good as it sounds, so Jeff Bird Project.
Well, that's great. Let's start with the first thing you talked about, which is the adventure side, I think is how you put it, search for lost cities. Now, I didn't even realize that that was part of your list of things that you do, but it's pretty exciting to be able to talk about it. What got you into that?
Well, you know, it's a long story in one respect, but I'll give you the short version. Basically, from a very early age, I was interested in this sort of thing. I grew up in the hills of Kentucky, and there were Indian mounds and places around, you know, pre-Civil War things, Indian places. I started reading books. Well, you know, everyone's heard of Eric Von Däniken, of course.
Of course, yeah.
There are other authors out there, too. And I would just read these. I was tremendously fascinated by the stories that I read. And I wanted to know more, but it seemed the conventional history wasn't telling me anything. We were hearing stories that just didn't incorporate any of the stuff that I was interested in, world history. It's like they took the high points of the people who had the power and created an entire melodrama around these folks, and it seemed that there was a lot more to history than what I was being taught. So I wanted to know more, and I kept searching. I eventually got old enough to go out on my own, and in doing so, ended up in Peru. I was a guest speaker on a tour. And, well, one thing led to another. I started my own tour company. And so for, I don't know, maybe 20 years, was leading people on trips down to Peru. And, of course, doing that, you can afford to stay a little longer. You don't have to leave.
Sure.
Made a lot of friends in a lot of places. You know, out in the outback of Peru, it's a lot different than most people realize. It's really very primitive. So meeting these folks and becoming friends with them, it opened doors. And some of these doors led to very strange and exciting places that the world at large had really never seen. So I went and checked them out.
So, and just but real quick, Jerry, now, especially going to these places, do you consider yourself a sensitive, an intuitive, something of that nature? Because if so, going to these places must be pretty intense for you.
Well, it was very intense because I was experiencing things that had no, there weren't any records. Excuse me, there weren't any records to tell me what I was feeling about these places, the things that I would see. You know, my experience growing up as a child, just to flash back for a moment, is I would know things before they were going to happen. I could hear people thinking. See energy around objects and people. I could hold something and know what the story was about it. So I was a weird kid.
Yeah.
Going to Peru with this kind of thing going on was pretty trippy. And of course, this healing thing that I'm able to do, that opened a lot of doors because there are no doctors out there. They have medicine now, shaman, and they're using similar techniques as my own. So I was able to learn from them, and they picked up a few things from me, I hope. But it opened a lot of doors. And these folks, when they felt that they not only could trust me, but would take me into their family, they're very open and gracious. And for the most part, anyway. And they would tell us things, tell Kathy things. So I would talk to her. And there would be these exchanges of stories and myth and... It's like, well, where is this place? Oh, it's just right up here, you know, a day's walk. Well, I'd like to see it. Okay. Well, we can do that tomorrow. Well, and that's how these things evolved. We didn't take video cameras with us at first because, well, they were pretty expensive and pretty bulky. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe 2001 or so, we started taking cameras with us and recording it just so we could bring it back and show folks during a lecture or just having friends over to show them things. But I had always made videos for my passengers, put together like a hour-long video of their trip and just gave it to them as a gift. So I had all kinds of editing experience.
Okay.
I decided to start editing these things together and turning it into a short documentary of our adventure. That's how Expeditions TV was born. But we saw a lot of strange things that are just mind-blowing. They really are.
So when you say lost cities, did you have some specific cities of legend or something that you were seeking? Or was it more of a, you were exploring and you would stumble upon lost cities?
It was more of the latter. You see, for example, we go into this place that's been held by terrorists and occupied by narco-traffickers, Sintacachi. We go up this valley because there are some huge boulders there with these petroglyphs on them. And Kathy, having seen a picture of it, said, I think I can read this. We have to go there and see it. Well, we did. It was a very real dangerous place to go, to the north central part of Peru. Anyhow, we get there and it's a map going up this valley. Well, we don't know how far, and we talk to the people there in this village, and they're going, oh, well, you know, it's about 3 days walk that way. And yeah, there's a place. They start telling us all about this thing. They were really surprised that Kathy could read the map. They couldn't, but they knew their area quite well. We ended up going about 85 miles following this river and eventually getting into the highlands. And the highlands of Peru are like 10 to 12,000 feet. The really, really high parts are, you know, 18 to 20-some thousand feet. Well, right there at that line where the trees have pretty much stopped growing, and it's perpetually in fog. It's called the eyebrow of the jungle. This is where we eventually ended up. And that's where we found the first. We call them the lost city because it's real cliche. but it's just an ancient city that, you know, is forgotten to the rest of the world. And from there, Kathy identified five more. And the remarkable thing about it was that these places, we were surprised that there was so much gold in the rock. It was really astonishing. And the hundreds of burial sites, completely untouched.
Really?
There was a paved road that the ancients had made that would apparently go from one city to the next, you know, through the mountains.
And nobody had known that these were there, huh?
No. And they couldn't even see it from satellite pictures because it's always obscured by cloud. This is called the eyebrow of the jungle. And it's on the rare occasion that maybe there aren't any clouds in a certain area, but they're always moving.
So have those sites been visited by archaeological teams or any other groups since you've stumbled upon them?
No, they haven't, and we think that's just ridiculous. But we went back to the Ministry of Culture in Peru and took the GPS coordinates and told them what we had found, and we basically were told, okay, well, you're going to need about $100,000 because you're going to need to buy these permits to go excavate this place and to document it, and then you're going to have to hire archaeologists, you're going to have to hire porters. And
all right. Hey, Jerry, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish the discussion. It's Jerry Wills. Hey, gang, it's JV here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Beyond Reality Radio. Some of you are new to the program, and some of you have been with us for years. And no matter if you're interested in ghosts, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy discussions, or any of the other topics we explore on this program, we do it for you. Our goal here is to help find answers to some of the world's most enduring mysteries. And as we continue to bring you interviews and discussions each night, it's important that we get your feedback and, even more importantly, your support. The media landscape is forever changing, and as it does, we need to be able to change with it. That's why it's important for you right now to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Once on YouTube, just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Subscribe. It's all free, and it'll make you part of our global community. In addition, Beyond Reality Radio is available as a podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Beyond Reality Radio and subscribe there as well. And finally, we have an archive program that you may enjoy as well. This show can be found on major podcast platforms, and it's called Beyond Reality Paranormal. By supporting us in one or all of those places, you can be sure we'll be able to continue to deliver quality shows to you, no matter what form the media landscape takes. As a paranormal historian, I promise you the best and most entertaining conversations as we continue to hunt for the truth.
As we continue our discussion with Jerry Wills, we've been talking about Jerry's adventures in South America, stumbling upon some long-forgotten cities. And Jerry, you said there was gold in these cities. What was the, was it, you know, in the embedded in the rock itself, or was this gold that was laid in the rock by the former inhabitants of the city?
Yeah, good question. No, it was homogeneous with the rock.
So it was actually
we found,
yeah, actually rock that had fragments of gold in it from its formation.
Yeah, and it was real surprising. I'd never seen anything like it. We found out years later that the second largest gold mine in the world is there in northern Peru, and it actually wasn't that far away from where these places are. You know, far away being relative, let's say within 100 miles. But 100 miles in that terrain is weeks of travel. It's
right.
A long way.
Right. So let's get into the bit of your sensitivities. I mean, you described a lot of particularly astounding abilities and sensitivities. How did that come into play when you were in a city that had been forgotten for ages, of a civilization that was essentially forgotten for ages, but still was so rich with relics from that civilization?
Well, you know, the thing is that you don't have a point of reference for any of this. The things that I would psychically pick up about this, and I've done this so much that I'm pretty confident with what I received, but it didn't make a lot of sense. The people who lived here, we found out they were called the Chechepoya, and no one knows who the Chechepoya really were. But what we were finding in these places were these ancient relics and so forth that I could go along and I could touch and I could sense into the place and into the entire atmosphere of the city. And I was seeing what looked to me like white people. I mean, like Caucasians that were like, you know, thousands of years ago, but they were just like us, except, you know, they were just in this ancient time.
Now, when
they
you
were from a different place,
when you said that you found out they were, and forgive me, what was the name of the people?
Chechepoyas.
Chechepoyas. When you found out, did you sense that, or did somebody locally tell you that's what they were?
No, I didn't sense it. I just saw them as like Caucasian.
No, but I mean, that name told to you by the locals saying that these were the people that lived there, or was this something that you picked up from your sensitivities?
Well, I got some from the locals, but most of it from a professor at the university in Lima, archaeological professor.
And as a
I don't know who they were.
As a student, if you will, of Eric Von Daniken, do you feel as though those folks could have had some kind of extraterrestrial connection?
I don't think so. My feeling is, both from what I sensed then and then I could piece it all together much later over the years, these people were actually part of a group of people who came across from the Middle East. You remember the stories about the Phoenicians and how they they're great traders and they traveled the seas?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of stories about
these
guys. They eventually fell into decline and the Romans took them over. Well, there's a reason why that happened. It had nothing to do with their prowess or ability to defend themselves. They basically went broke because a volcano erupted and it obscured the night sky, and that's what these folks used to navigate. They sailed at night. Well, the Chechepoyas had come across, they weren't the Chechepoyas, the Phoenicians had come across and developed a trade route with Central and South America. They were looking for Aspondygus shells. You remember that purple dye they used in Egypt that was so highly regarded?
Yep.
Well, this is what they used, was these powdered, the dye removed from the Aspondygus shells, the purple dye. There are mountains of these shells in Ecuador and northern Peru. They actually had set up very large city factories for this and for other reasons. You know, they were great traders, and they would pick up all kinds of things and take it back with them to trade with. So the people, we eventually came to understand that these people who built these cities were people who had been brought over there for these purposes, but when the night sky became obscured because of the volcanic eruption, the Phoenicians weren't able to sail, and it stayed that way for many, many years. And as a result, these people were stranded, so they moved away from the coastlines and went up into the mountains to fortify strongholds for them to live. And that's where they ended up. They were tall people with blonde and red hair, with green and blue eyes, and they were ferocious warriors. They had to become ferocious warriors, I suppose, because of the environment and the people that lived around in those areas. They were pretty ferocious, too. And that's how all of that evolved. But there were others who were coming down there as well, and these were folks from Asia. And they left their mark on these areas as well. So, you know, from those very early times of going and seeing these places up to the point in time we really understood what's going on, it was an unfolding story. But regarding the extraterrestrials, one of the things that you can hear when you're down there from the people who live in the outback, they all say that they're from the stars. They all say that the Pleiades is a place where their friends come from. Well, I thought that was an interesting myth until one afternoon I met a fellow who said he was from the Pleiades. And this is the time when Barbara Marciniak's book, Bringers of the Dawn, had just been released that summer. I was down there in the fall. And there's this fellow who climbed on top of the bus as I was riding up to Machu Picchu. Seemed to know my name, which I thought was kind of strange. I'd never met this guy in my life. And he was very peculiar. Something was very strange about him, although he looked like a skinny backpacking hippie type. And you find those down in Peru a lot. Well, as it turns out, he was pretty confident in telling me where he was from and his story. And within a few days, and then over the course of the next several years, I became good friends with him and the other travelers that he was there with. I don't know if they're from the Pleiades, but, you know, when someone walks out of a flying saucer and tells you they're from somewhere, you really don't have much option but just to believe them.
Right.
And that was the case with him and with these others.
Hey, Jerry, one thing I do want to get into, though, yeah, that we really haven't touched on is the ability that you have to pretty much see energy that's attached through all things, to be able to also feel it and so forth. Can you give us a little information on when you started having, when you realized you had this ability that so many others don't, and how you were able to learn to use it?
Sure, no problem. You know, when I was growing up, it was in central Kentucky. And I was a weird kid. And there were things I was able to do that no one else could do, but I didn't know that. Not when I'm, you know, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old. And I thought, you know, this just, I didn't talk about it much, but when I did, I was kind of ignored and chastised. You don't talk about those things. And finally, I got to the point where I couldn't talk about it at all, but I was having these experiences for as long as I can remember. Being a, just, you know, a 3-4 year old kid, I could hear people thinking. And it was a little weird. I could touch a picture and know all the stories. You know, people have their pictures up on, you know, nightstands or in the living room, and I could just see the entire everything about them, know all about the people and where it was taken and all that. Well, it was one of those deals. I really didn't know much about the healing. We had animals on the farm, and I found the animals to be a lot more fun to be around than the people. And so I basically just hung out with a lot of the animals in my spare time, went to the woods with the dogs, saw the squirrels and so forth, and occasionally one of the dogs would get hurt, and I would take a look and see what I could do to help it. I could feel things, see things, and I tried fixing it. And it worked pretty well. There was one instance that really stands out in my mind where I think it was a real shocker for me. And, you know, I can't say for a fact that this mouse was actually still alive or dead, but it sure looked dead. It was in a mouse trap. It was about 5 in the morning, and I was out there too, you know, in the cold. You have to fill up the scoop with a bunch of oats and corn and whatnot, take it to the cows. Well, here's a mouse in a mouse trap. So I felt really bad for it, and I leaned over, picked it up, took it out of the mouse trap, put it in my hand, and it was just still and cold. Well, I cut my hands around it. I thought, well, if I just blow on it, warm it up, maybe it'll be all right. So I did. I did that for a couple minutes and focused on it, you know, to help it to heal and be all right. I was only, gosh, 12 or 13 at the time. Well, within a short time, within that 2 or 3 minutes, it started moving in my hands. And when I opened my hands, just sat there very calmly looking up at me, a little bit of blood on its nose, and it was alive.
Wow. Now, how old were you when that happened?
I don't know. I was probably 12 or 13.
Now, did you recognize what had happened at the time? I mean, at 12 or 13 years old, you may not have been able to process the what had just transpired.
Yeah, you know, it really didn't occur to me. I just thought, oh, well, the mouse is fine. So I gave it a good talking to. I always talk to the animal. Mm-hmm. And told it, you know, I'll get rid of the mouse traps, and I'll put some grain down this crack over here. Because when I held the mouse, I saw it had babies, you know, in my mind. So I'll just drop some oats and corn over here a few every once in a while. And, you know, that way you don't have to worry about it. And I got rid of all the mouse traps. And never had any other problems. Sometimes the mice would fall into the barrel. It's a 50-gallon drum with the top cut out. And, you know, then they'd just be in there and have big trouble for the mouse. So, you know, gave them a good talking to. Never had any more trouble with them at all in that respect. And it didn't occur to me that this was dead and now it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
In looking back, I can't say with absolute certainty that that's the case, but I can't really explain why it would feel so absolutely cold in my hands, just, you know, like a stone. Well, this then became something I started doing with the other animals. A cow with a hurt leg, or, you know, there'd be the dog, it got hurt, like I said. One afternoon, there was this fellow, and our farms, you know, the farms were like a mile apart. And this guy had driven this little Ford tractor over and parked it there on the side, beside our house where we lived on the farm. It had been raining, it was muddy, he stepped off, and when he did, he slipped and fell down, and he had apparently, I would say now, he tore the meniscus on his knee because he was hurt really bad, and he was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. He's an older fellow. Well, I mean, I was young. Hey, everybody was old. But he was going to have to walk, you know, like a mile across the fields to get back home. He's rubbing his knee and had tears kind of in his eyes. He's strong, but it must have hurt bad. So I said, well, let me see you. Let me see it. And I put my hands on there, and my hands just got hot. And I could see what it was, and so I just imagined the pieces going back together again, and then my hands cooled off. I let go of it. He looked at me like he'd seen a ghost. Well, you know what that's like if you see a ghost, mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So he didn't say a damn thing. He got up and walked away without any limping or anything. And then it got around the community. Something is really strange with that kid over there. And these people back then are very superstitious. If you're not in the Baptist church, then I don't know what you are. And I was ostracized in the community and whispered about, and I was pretty creepy. And the only people that wanted to talk to me was really my uncle, who wanted to know who was going to win the Kentucky Derby or any particular horse race that he wanted to bet on.
Right.
Well, but Jerry, you would
gave him the answers.
Jerry, you would think that in a community, such a religious community, that it would be looked upon in a better light. That
more like more spiritual,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah, almost like as a blessing or some sort of, yeah, having that ability. Why would it be looked at in a negative light or sort of shunned? Why do you think that would happen?
I don't know. I really don't. You know, I can't explain it. They are very superstitious. And, you know, we're dealing with people who have ancestors that were medicine women who had black hair with a white streak in their head and stuff like this, that they were kind of spooky people. Gosh, I mean, these guys would go out hunting for possums at night and thinking the devil was chasing them around and shoot a possum. And they shine the light up there, and you still see the eyes looking at them. Well, the head of it got caught in a forked tree, but they had stories about the flat that would just be following you around in the woods at night. You know, the devil's going to come and take your soul, all this stuff. So this was pretty creepy stuff to them.
Okay.
And, you know, being an early teenager and having this kind of thing being said about you, you basically decided to keep very quiet and just get very reserved. And I didn't talk about it very much past that point. You know, people would get sick, and I'd think to myself, well, I could probably help them, but I didn't dare even try. It probably wasn't until my aunt died that I even mentioned it again. And when she died, she died in an afternoon, got the call, and that night, everybody went to bed early because my mom and her sister, and they were all going to go out to Denver, Colorado, where they live. Well, she came to me, and she gave me a message to give to somebody to deliver to her husband of some important details that she wanted to relate. No one wanted to hear it, except for my crazy uncle. He wanted to hear it, and he was going out there, too. Well, as it turns out, everything that she had told me to tell, he related that, and it was completely 100% dead on and kind of freaked everybody out. But I kept quiet about things after that. And, you know, the other thing that was going on in the hills at that time was there was a lot of UFO activity. A lot of people were seeing things, lights moving through the trees and crafts floating above the tree line. There were some animal mutilations going on. And people were just pretty scared. And I guess, you know, all things totaled up. Anything that wasn't understandable or out of the normal became something to be avoided and whispered about because it was scary. And there was a haunted house down there. You guys would have loved this place. It was the scariest damn place I've ever been in my life. And you could hear voices in there. You didn't even have to be psychic. You could, things would happen in there. It was just scary as hell. And everybody avoided this place like the plague. No one wanted to go there. I went there at midnight just to see if they could scare me, and they did. But, you know, things back in that region during that time, now they wanted things to be pretty much within a certain dynamic, and anything outside of that, they didn't want any part of it.
Right.
And I was certainly outside that dynamic.
I asked the question, where you felt that your source of this ability, this energy, this skill comes from? We've all heard of, you know, religious-type healers, but I don't think that's what you're talking about here.
No, and I'm not a religious person. Well, I think that the source of this healing comes from whatever God is. I don't know what God is. You know, a lot of people have little, you know, ideas of their own, but I don't have a clue. But whatever God is this energy. And this energy, whenever I'm around someone who needs my help, it starts running through me. If I acknowledge it and allow it to continue, it builds up. And it starts feeling as though I'm getting hot, just physically heated up inside with a tingling, like a buzzing or electric feeling moving through me. Then, if I want to work on someone, it's like, okay, here we go. I take a deep breath, and as soon as I do that, my hands just become quite warm. I've learned to control that over the years, so it doesn't burn a person. And then I put my hands on them. I close my eyes, I look inside, and then I see what there is to see. And when I find what the problem is, then I start focusing the streams of energy in that direction. And not necessarily to just heal it, but to actually bring it back to the fullness as it was originally created. And it's worked pretty well. For about 11 years, Fox TV would do a couple of specials on me every year, and books about me, and, you know, all this other stuff, a lot of Alderall, you know. Okay. it's all very ingratiating, but, you know, that's a short answer, I guess.
Well, so Jerry, then real quick, you feel that it's an ability that was given to you by a higher power and not more of like a human evolution trait where, you know, people are evolving into this ability?
That's a very good point. And you know something, I think that's what this is meant to illustrate. Because when I teach classes, and I do teach periodically, and not that often, but once in a while, and when I teach classes, I try to bring it to bear that this is something that's inherent in who we are as people. We're supposed to be able to do this. Connecting into, let's call it the cosmos, for lack of a better term. But you can connect and start channeling this energy through you. Everyone has this ability. I think it's an evolutionary trait that we're getting back in touch with. I think that it was always there, but we're getting in touch with it because we're asking the right questions now. And because we're asking those questions, doors are opening, and we're allowing ourselves to look a little bit farther beyond the boundaries that were set in place by organized religion and models of society that inhibited this kind of activity. Now, we're free to take a look just a little bit farther down and examine what there is to see there and try for ourselves. I taught a class, a series of classes. I have them online at jerrywills.com. In these three classes, there were 25 or 30 people there. I've forgotten how many right now, and it's not important, but there were at least 25 or 30. The first class was how to sense and see energy. Everybody could do it, including the camera people who were there shooting us from Fox TV. Second class, how to see energy. I mean, people talk about seeing the aura. It's kind of figurative and a bit of obscure for most people to really get their mind around. But in this class, everyone saw energy, absolutely, and even the camera people. The third was how to take what you just learned and move objects by focusing your energy on them. Everybody was able to do that. This is peculiar to me, to be able to do this, because I've been able to do it my entire life, but I don't think that it is a thing missing from other people.
Yeah.
Well,
there's different types of healing. There's healing with psychokinesis. There's biokinesis, which is the ability to heal, energy healing, and things of that nature. So these are things that have been out there for a long time that people have discussed. And it's always one of those things where you got to wonder, is it something that was given by a higher power? Is it more of the human evolution where, you know, we're getting the ability to use more and more of our brain function, which is allowing us more and more ability to get in touch with different things. So, yeah, there's just so many options out there. But go ahead, Jim.
Well, I think the final answer to this is going to be discoveries made in quantum physics. And it's very simply called the observer effect. Okay. And what you focus on and believe you're going to see, you will see, because the universe reorganizes itself in relation to the amount of energy put into the observation.
Gotcha. Okay.
The belief structure.
All right, let's go to Tiffany in New Jersey. Courtney in New Jersey. Welcome to Beyond Reality Radio.
Thanks, guys. I'm a first-time caller, and I have a question for all of you gentlemen, actually. A question and a quick story.
Okay.
I am actually an individual who is totally blind, and I know that Jason, on Ghost Hunters, you guys actually did an investigation, I think, in Canada, of a gentleman's workplace who was totally blind. And I know he had spoken about being able to feel more spirits much more easily, much more intensely.
Oh, absolutely.
But for myself, I was just kind of wondering, like, do you guys feel that that's something that can be the case? Because I know for me, I've heard a lot of, I guess, auditory communication a lot more easily, I think. So I'm just wondering how you guys feel on that first question.
Well, right off, I've got a friend who's legally blind as well. And I will tell you that because they've lost that sense, their other senses are so much more capable than mine or anybody else who still has the vision of sight. Their other senses have just become that much more incredible. My friend will be standing there and he'll be talking about somebody coming in or whatever, and something I could never hear, and sure enough, somebody comes in, or you know, there's just telling me that there's an animal running through the front yard, and sure enough, there is. So his abilities are far more advanced than mine when it comes down to that, and I believe that also opens them up to being able to feel more, whether it's energy from spirit activity or something of that nature. What would you say, Jerry?
Oh, I completely agree. I've a few friends over the years who were completely blind, and their sensitivities were just profound. And, you know, in a couple of instances, both of them could hear the, we'll call them ghosts, spirits, whatever, but they could hear this, and they could talk for them. And I found it incredibly fascinating because, of course, I could see them, and I could hear them. So it wasn't like he was making it up. That kind of cross-validation was really good for me because I never really thought about it. But, you know, this certainly did prove a point to me.
I think, Courtney, you wanted to share a story with us as well. Is that right?
Oh, yes, if that's all right.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it, sure.
Okay. So it actually goes along with my question before the break. But growing up, both of the houses that I lived in were near cemeteries, just my luck. But the second house that we had lived in was right near a Native American enslaved burial ground. And I did feel quite often a lot of presence is kind of passing through, some negative, some positive, but I never felt like I was truly alone in that house. But one particular incident, and this is where my question comes in to all of you gentlemen. One day I was sitting in my room, actually watching an episode of Ghost Hunters, ironically, and I could have sworn I heard my mom come in the door, and the alarm beeped like it normally would if you open a door or a window. My dogs barked and everything, and I called out to my mom, and I said, "Mom, is that you?" I heard back the response, "Yes." And then I said, "Oh, you're home." I heard back again the response, "Yes." But I didn't hear her coming up the staircase. Now, I could have sworn that was my mom's voice. Well, I felt like something was really not right. So I called my mom on her cell phone, and I said, "Mom, did you just come inside?" And she said, "No, I didn't." I said, "Well, where are you?" Figuring maybe I heard her voice, you know, from the street or something. She said, "I haven't even left work yet." And she worked like 50 miles away from where we lived. And it was pretty terrifying. So I'm just wondering, could that have been possibly a negative or some kind of demonic presence mimicking my mom's voice?
It could have been. It very possibly could have been just an intelligent spirit passing through for whatever reason as well. Yeah, it's tough to say without being there.
Other than responding in what you felt was your mother's voice, Courtney, did anything else happen? Did something fall off a shelf, a picture come off the wall, a door slam, anything else that would give you the indication there was some anger involved?
Yes, actually. I heard one of my dogs, actually he was my seeing eye dog at the time, growling, which was very, very abnormal for him to have done that. But he also pretty much like almost laid on top of me, like a protective kind of situation. And not only that, but the electricity went out. So, okay. Yes, my episode of Ghost Hunters that I was watching was unfortunately interrupted. but that was pretty freaky. I mean, like I said, he was my guide dog, so they're trained not to not to have growling reactions, and they're really very well-bred and very sweet animals. So that was extremely unusual. And I mean, the hairs on the back of his neck were standing up high. Mm.
Jerry, what do you think?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a fascinating story. I just don't have a clue.
But
I certainly
nothing's happened since, right? Like that?
I'm sorry?
Nothing's happened like that since?
Fortunately, I no longer live in that house because, like I said, it was a really, really odd place. I got married and moved to New Jersey, and now the house that I live in is actually a purely positive environment, which is the first time that's happened to me in all the places I've lived.
Well, yeah, please keep us in the loop if that ever happens to you again, because that's something that... And really, to make some sort of a judgment call, I'd have to be there and trying to see if we were able to document anything. But just know that we're always here for you.
Great. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, hon.
Yes, thank you, Courtney, for the call, sharing the story, and thank you for listening. Jerry, you also teach courses on, and I'm trying to remember the exact name as well, my hesitation, Mechanics of Consciousness. Or you give a lecture or a class.
Yeah,
what is that? What's that about?
Well, that was actually a course that I taught, I don't know, maybe 8-9 years ago. It was a 6-month course with the final course being taught in the Amazon jungle with shaman. It was pretty successful for the duration of time that I taught it, but it just took so long, and there were only out of, you know, the hundreds of people that took the course, there were probably five that actually took it into a practice into their lives where they actually were using it in their business and in their day-to-day life. Most people taught or treated it as a kind of a gee whiz. It's kind of a fascinating thing to learn all this, but didn't do anything with it. So I stopped teaching it. Instead, I changed gears on that, and I started teaching the Gateway courses, which were the ones I had told you about just a few minutes ago, a little while ago, which was more pointed towards having experience in the class instead of having philosophy and knowledge imparted. It was having the knowledge and an experience within the class environment. So you walked away with every class having had some profound realization at the end of the class. And those have been much more successful. And I teach those periodically too. We're really so busy with all the things that we do and the places that we go that it's hard to set aside time to teach classes, but maybe once or twice a year.
Going back to the healing, do you have a sense of what the conditions have to be for you to be successful? Is there anything specific that you need from your, I don't know if I should call them a patient or your subject or your, you know, whatever term you would use for the person that you're trying to help? Do they have to be a believer in something? Do they have to have some kind of connection? Is there anything that you need them to be for your healing process to be able to work on them?
No, not really. I've had people who thought it was a bunch of hooey and then get angry when it worked. I've had doctors that, well, I'll tell you that story if you want to hear. It's a very quick one. The guy had had bone spurs on both ankle or both heels of his feet. He couldn't walk. Multiple bone spurs, and he's going to have to retire. Well, his wife convinced him to let me do it, and so he said, it ain't going to work anyway. So I did it. I worked on him. And when I got done, he's stomping his feet around on the floor and just really, really upset because now he can't retire. He's going to get a disability retirement.
Yeah, so you ruined his plans.
I inadvertently, I suppose. I thought he wanted my help. But I've worked on people, you know, children, you know, the only thing that children believe is that mother is God.
Right.
You know, that's what children believe. And they don't know who I am or what I do. And I've worked on a lot of children, and there's a lot of children doing quite well today because I did. I worked on people who were in comas. One of the first stories that Fox had about me was because they couldn't believe what happened. The guy was going to be unplugged. He was in a coma. Had been in a coma. Had part of his skull removed and pipes coming out of his head, and it was just, I'd never seen such a thing in my life. And so I worked on him. He was supposed to be unplugged the next morning. They brought me in as a last thing to try. I mean, the guy and his wife and two kids, and here he is laying there in a coma, and not expected they're going to unplug him the next morning. So I worked on him, and he woke up. Wow. Another guy, Kelly Osaka, there's videos about all this as well. Fox TV did videos about these. They're on my website in the video testimonial section. Kelly was beaten the head with a shovel. They didn't tell me that they didn't expect him to live another 2 or 3 hours. So I went in and worked on it. I told his wife, he'll wake up in the morning and have a bad headache. He's going to be fine. I can't fix his eye. Well, I mean, she was pretty shocked, and everybody thought that I was nuts for saying it, but he woke up the next morning with all the hemorrhaging in his brain stopped. They couldn't find part of the problems they'd seen before. The only thing that didn't make it was his eye. His eye never was right again.
Hmm.
This is a big guy from Tonga. If you watch the show, you'll see it. It's a hell of a story. So, you know, they don't have to believe. They don't have to be awake. Doesn't matter.
Right.
What matters is whether I believe or not.
Right.
That's what makes the difference.
Okay.
Yeah, it's your faith in the ability.
I mean, it's not really faith. It's faith is in the face of a lack of knowing. And for me, it's a knowing. You either approach this with absolute confidence or it doesn't work.
Where can people find out more about your services, what you do, and maybe where to see you or take a course or figure out what you've got going on.
Sure. Well, there's a variety of ways. If they want to get a hold of me, they can go to jerrywills.com. That's a good way of doing it. The courses that I talked about, there are 3 2-hour video courses there. They're cheap, like $12 or something. I did it intentionally, so everyone could afford it. You can just find them, look under the Gateway series or something like that. You'll find them pretty easy if you look around through there. If they want to contact me for help with any of their health issues, that information is there as well. So just take a look. You'll see where it says schedule your session. You can do it that way. You can also read more about me there. If you're interested in Lost Cities and the adventure end of things, you can go to expeditions.tv, and that's expeditions where the word starts with an X, not an EX. So it's expeditions.tv. And if you like rock and roll and other good music, go to jeffbirdproject.com. That's Jeff, B-Y-R-D, like Admiral Byrd, jeffbirdproject.com.
That's great, Jerry. Thanks so much for being a guest. We appreciate having you on Beyond Reality Radio. Hope to have you back again sometime. And Jay, let's go right to the phone lines. We've had some people waiting for quite a long time. This is Terry. Terry, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. Sorry for the wait.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, you have a question?
Yes, I do. And this is my third time calling, and I was kidding around on the chat room because you told me not to listen to my voice, and I did, and I sat on the drunk every single time, and I was not drunk. It's a horrible thing to listen to your voice. But anyway, question for you is, you go hunting for ghosts with your equipment and stuff. Have you ever had a person that lost, you know, that had a friend or family member that has passed away, and they wanted to get a message to them and try to contact them with some of your equipment that you use to hunt ghosts?
Absolutely, we have. Absolutely. And, you know, we recommend different things. If somebody's trying to connect with a lost family member that they believe might still be at the location of the house, a lot of times, well, we recommend setting up devices at night while they're sleeping, whether it be you can set up 2 digital recorders. You can record yourself asking questions with one and have the other one recording and just any other sound. So one, you start playing the one that has your questions on it after you go to bed, and let the other one record as it's picking up everything, so it might be able to get answers for you. So there's a lot of different ways like that for somebody to try to communicate with a loved one.
Yeah, and I just was scared too because, you know, I want an EVP recorder and all that stuff, and I wanted to do it, but I've also been warned, you know, once you open the door, bad things can come through too. So
you're not opening a door, hon. What you're doing is just trying to communicate with a possible family member that you believe is there. It's not like you're sitting there allowing something to use you or use your psyche to communicate. You're not using a Ouija board again allowing something to use your psyche to communicate back and forth. You're not opening any doors. You're just trying you're just trying to make contact with something that's there. It's not like you're sitting there throwing out spells or anything of that nature. So
paranormal has ever happened. He's not here. And the reason I want to contact him is I have a message for him because we fought the last time I saw him alive, we were arguing. And a week later, he was in a horrible car crash and it broke his neck.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But one thing let me say then, if you don't think he's there, then just be a little cautious because you don't want to sit there and try to channel out to the entire world, because then you are trying to open a door so this person can come through and communicate. It's a little different than if you believe somebody might be still there at that location and you're trying to communicate with them. So
right. That was my worry, because I don't want to invite anything into my house, because I have a daughter and a husband, and you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you can always just set up recorders, ask questions, and you know, if it's a loved one, might be just passing through or checking on you, and you stand a higher chance to be able to catch him at that point, or you know, be able to make some sort of communication. So I do recommend that. Grab a couple recorders, record questions on one, play it through the night, and have another one that's just recording the blank sound, and see what you get for answers.
Okay. And what about a ghost box? What are your feelings on that?
I have very little faith in them, I'll be honest with you. I own a couple of them, and it's just very mixed readings on it. You're welcome to get one and try it, but I just remember that they're just scanning radio frequencies. So,
right.
You know, yeah, you can try it. Each person's got to figure out what piece of equipment works for them. But I just I have very little faith in them. So, okay.
Right.
So does that help?
And I wanted to also thank you because this is my third time calling in. Last week I called in when you had the out-of-body person, and I called in about my friend that died. Mm-hmm. And y'all helped me immensely. I mean, when I heard his response, I just bawled. I cried so hard, and it was such a relief.
I'm just happy that we could help you.
And
I wanted
to thank you so much.
Well, no, I'm just happy we could help you, and thank you, hon. And keep on listening.
I will. I listen every single night I can.
You're awesome.
Thank you very much for the call, Terry. Let's go to Donna, my neighbor just down the road. Donna, sorry for the wait. Welcome to Beyond Reality Radio.
Oh, you remembered my name. That's awesome. I promise I will speak slower this time.
Now, I know it says you had a question for the speaker, but we don't have the speaker, so hopefully either Jason and I can help you out.
Don't speak too slow. You only got 2 minutes. So.
I'm kidding.
So,
and in response to what Terry had just said on her call, I guess I'm considered a sensitive, and what I've always been taught is our loved ones, you always hear us if we're speaking to them, regardless of, you know, whether we go to their gravesite or where we are, that they can hear us. So that, I don't know, you know, what her thoughts are on that, but that might help her, and I believe that. And, you know, my mom has passed, and still miss her terribly, and I do that all the time if I'm having, you know, a bad day or whatever, or just need to say, miss you, Mom, love you, you know, I do, and I think that she hears me, and she pops in and out and whatever, and I have had dreams before where, you know, visitation dreams and so forth, so, yeah, I think that stuff can happen.
Sure.
Now, I had a question for you, Jason. Sure. As far as, you know, I know you're also a firm believer that children are more susceptible to experiencing things than, or not necessarily more so than adults, but, you know, they're more open to it than adults can be. Yeah. What are your thoughts on, like, a kid who hears, constantly thinking that they're hearing their name being called?
Well,
and then, you know, they go to check with that person, and that person says, no, I didn't call you. And sometimes they are or not may not be thinking about that person. So, you know, there may not be that connection or whatever. But they just constantly think, you know, once or twice a day or whatever, that someone's calling their name.
Well, honestly, children are more prone to see things than adults. To a child, anything's possible. You know, a big fat guy brings a bag full of gifts down a chimney every Christmas, and a big bunny brings them a basket. So they're more open. They're able to see things that we are not. So as for a child hearing their name being called, very possibly they could be hearing some sort of entity calling their name, and it just might have the same cadence as a family member or somebody else, so they might assume that it's that person when it's really not. So the possibility is there. And I'm a firm believer that children are going to pick up something a lot easier than we do. So, but thanks for the call, hon. I know we're running out of time.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Donna. We got to let you go because we're at the end of the program. Thanks for listening. It's Beyond Reality Paranormal. We'll see you next time.